Hi, I'm Peter Suderman, and this is The Reason Podcast. Donald Trump launched his presidential campaign by warning that America had become a dumping ground for immigrants, and that Mexico in particular was sending criminals and people with lots of problems. His presidency has been marked by anti-immigrant rhetoric. In the summer of 2019, President Trump previewed sweeping immigration raids, tweeting that next week ICE will begin the process of removing the millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. The Trump administration, like the Obama administration before it, had already conducted raids targeting undocumented immigrants, but Trump was promising a series of actions that were intended to at least create the impression of a step up in immigration enforcement around the country. That culminated in early August when Immigrations and Customs Enforcement agents conducted one of the largest worksite immigration raids in U.S. history, arresting nearly 700 chicken plant workers in Mississippi on suspicion of working illegally. The raids, which were conducted jointly with the Department of Justice, left young children separated from their parents. The Trump administration has defended those raids, saying that they had been in the works for over a year and arguing that the workplaces were exploiting undocumented workers. So are these raids just for show? Does Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric actually encourage asylum seekers? And what's the connection between Obama-era raids and Trump's? I sat down with ProPublica reporter Dara Lind to discuss these questions and more. So the first thing I want to do is just ask you, what was it that happened in Mississippi? Tell us a little bit about what these raids represent.
Sure. So the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and this was an operation that was actually led by the kind of Special Operations Division of ICE, Homeland Security Investigations, which is separate from the kind of run-of-the-mill deportation agents, enforcement and removal operations that people often think of when they think of ICE. They are responsible for some of these bigger investigations into kind of workplace immigration enforcement. And teams led by HSI agents targeted several different agricultural processing plants in Mississippi, some of which were Koch Foods, some of which were owned by smaller operators, and kind of descended upon them bearing both regular search warrants and like civil administrative warrants, which allowed them to arrest people on suspicion of being unauthorized immigrants. And you know, swept through, got a bunch of people who weren't able to produce papers at that point, held them. Many of these people have since been released, kind of pending. You know, they were given a court date, they were given ankle bracelets, they're now officially in the deportation system. Some of them are still being held, but in total, we're looking at a higher number of arrests in a single day than we've ever seen with a workplace raid in the past. And this is a genre of raid that can often result in several hundred people being arrested, but going all the way up to 600 in, you know, just a few targeted locations is something we've never seen before.
So the Trump administration has been previewing these raids for months, right? These were not entirely unexpected. So tell us a little bit about that. Put these in context. There were people who were worried that these raids were coming, right?
So I would actually distinguish between these and the kind of raids that people were worried about. There's generally a vast reaction to anything Donald Trump says that implies that people are going to start getting rounded up and deported. That has a chilling effect in communities, whether or not people are unauthorized or not. You know, even green card holders can sometimes be worried about going outside. But usually the fear there is ICE agents going door to door, like in neighborhoods. There have been some raids like that under, say, the Obama administration did some of them, late Bush and Obama, but the kind of neighborhood sweeps that people really, really freak out about are not necessarily what this was. This was a separate operation that it came out after the fact, had been kept so closely that the White House may not have even known about it. When Trump was tweeting these things earlier this summer, there had been some back and forth consternation among immigration officials about whether having so much advance notice of raids was going to make it harder for agents to go door to door. And so there was a little bit of backbiting about, oh, you're making it harder for law enforcement to do their jobs, not directed at the president, directed at other people who had said the same things the president had said.
So during the Bush administration, we saw workplace raids that were like this. We saw immigration raids under President Obama, but not targeted at specific workplaces in the same way. Is that right?
Right. What the Obama administration would do was what were often dismissively called paper raids, right? They would do audits. They would tell an employer, okay, we're going to like over the next several weeks, check the employment status of everyone you tell us is an employee. And, you know, if you have some people who you don't think are authorized, you should ask them to produce some documents right now. And, you know, that often gave the employer the opportunity to quietly fire people so that they wouldn't get in trouble. But that was, that strategy was aimed at, you know, in theory, the law being enforced here is that it's illegal to employ someone without authorization. It's criminal to employ someone without authorization. You can't work in the U.S. without work authorization, but that's not a crime in the same way it is a crime to employ someone. So the Obama model was, okay, we're going to use civil fines because that's the appropriate response to somebody employing someone who they shouldn't be employing, rather than rounding these people up and arresting them for having been employed. The Trump administration takes the same approach to this that the Bush administration did, which is the real value of this is as a deterrent, right? You get a lot of press coverage for sweeping down into somewhere. You make an example of some people, and a lot of other, you know, would-be employers and employees both are thinking in the back of their heads, gee, I should be careful. I shouldn't, you know, I should maybe quit my job and move back, or I should maybe care a little bit more about screening my employees because I don't want this kind of thing to happen to me. And that's something where the big theatrical raid does a whole lot more damage than an I-9 audit.
This was in many ways a media event designed for media coverage. And so I wonder if you can sort of help us understand this, especially relative to President Obama, relative to President Bush. Isn't a lot of this just for show? Isn't it just to say, well, look, we're taking action and Trump believes that immigration raids help him politically?
I definitely think that the Trump administration has done a lot more immigration enforcement for show than kind of baseline everyday immigration enforcement. That's not necessarily because they're choosing not to. To a large extent, it's because they can't. The actual rate of deportations under Trump is lower than you would expect it to be, certainly a lot lower than it was under the first term of Obama. But that's a lot of that is because fewer people are coming into the U.S. than were in, say, the mid-2000s. And those who are, unlike the people who were coming in during Obama's first term, are largely families and people who are seeking asylum. So it's difficult to deport them immediately, which is why the Trump administration complains about loopholes all the time. So the ability to just kind of turn people around without spending a lot of money and deport them isn't really there. What ICE has done instead is detain a lot of people, spend a lot of money on detention, and then do some of these kind of big, flashy enforcement actions on the workforce, on the workplace side, you know, a couple of things that they then advertise as these big multi-city sweeps. I do think that when it comes to immigration enforcement, things that are just for show aren't ever just for show, by which I mean they are for show, but it's not just to like prove it to the base, right? The base often isn't even aware of this stuff. That's why during the Obama administration, when there were plenty of enforcement actions, you know, the Republican base didn't necessarily was saying that he should be impeached for not securing the border, that kind of thing. The target for whom the stuff that's just for show really does matter is immigrants themselves. And, you know, going way back to even before Trump was elected, but certainly the first days of his administration when he and other officials were going around saying, if you're here in the U.S. illegally, you should be afraid, you should be looking over your shoulder. There's been a large strain of kind of deterrence through fear in their strategy that they feel that people were allowed to get too comfortable during the Bush and Obama administrations, and that if they can just make it seem plausible enough that people will get deported, that might lead them to either, you know, self-deport or at very least to like not encourage family members to come join them.
So the goal here is to send the message to potential immigrants that it's a bad idea to try to cross the border. And we don't know if that's working.
No, I mean, this is always a bank shot at best, right? There is actually some really suggestive evidence that under the Obama and early Trump administrations, that the number of apprehensions, that when there were crackdowns, when, say, President Obama instituted family detention in late 2014, or when Trump came into office in early 2017, you do actually see dips in the number of people who are apprehended crossing into the U.S. And so there really is a plausible argument there that people are, when they're worried about a crackdown on enforcement, they're not likely to come in. But it looks like that's a wait and see kind of thing. It's not a, oh, well, we're permanently not coming. It's a, well, we don't really know what's going to happen, and so we'd better kind of hold off for a bit. What there's been suggestive evidence of, and this is something that no one's been able to nail down yet, but it's something that I and other reporters have heard a bunch from people who are working directly with migrants kind of coming through Mexico and up into the U.S., is there's a certain sense out there that because Trump is going to crack down, because he keeps threatening to like close the border entirely or keeps threatening that he's going to do this or the other thing next, that it creates an opportunity for smugglers to say, well, this is your last chance. You'd better get in now. We're offering special prices. You'd better come through before it's too late. And so it may actually be accelerating the rate at which people come by making them feel like, well, eventually it's probably for the best for me to come up there, and this is my last chance before Trump shuts it all down.
So the more that Trump cracks down on immigration, the more immigrants are likely to view it as a limited time offer that they need to get in on now before it's too late.
Well, certainly the more that Trump kind of threatens something in the near future and doesn't necessarily specify when that is and continues bumping that down the road, like when he was threatening to shut down the border with Mexico earlier this year, when he was briefly threatening to shut down Guatemalan immigration earlier this summer, there's definitely a way in which Trump's particular kind of bloviation does encourage this sort of thing.
I want to talk a little bit about people who are trying to come here to work legally. And this is one of the big arguments you hear from conservative immigration skeptics is, well, these people who are here working illegally should get in line, follow the rules, and come here legally, and they could do that. That isn't always the case, and especially when we're talking about the sort of low-skilled, year-round workers who work at places like the chicken processing plants that were raided last week. Can you tell us a little bit about the underlying system? What's it like if somebody actually wants to try and come here and play by the rules, follow the immigration laws, and get a permit to work legally?
Sure. I mean, for one thing, if you're trying to work in the U.S. legally, you don't just go, you just don't send in an application yourself and say, hey, I would like to work, please find someone to hire me. It has to be going through your would-be employer, which creates a lot of dynamics that don't necessarily favor the people who are trying to come and work. Also means that in practice, the people who are hiring the workers aren't necessarily the employers. One of the employers at this at the plants that were raided last week said that they weren't involved in hiring. That's something that often happens. You have this kind of level of disconnect. What often ends up happening is that people who are here on other visas are instead being told, being instructed to work. Certain kinds of student and travel visas are often subjected to this. So there's this whole like murky demimonde of technically they're legal, but they're not necessarily working legally. And all of that assumes that you can like get in touch with the right person and be brought over to work to begin with. You can't just from your village in Guatemala say, hey, by the way, I would like to go, I would like to come work on your farm. The process that actually exists for bringing people, which assumes, oh, there are people from outside who we are going to get hired legally, bring in, and then send back, doesn't actually reflect the way that people tend to work, which is they are coming to the U.S. and then they're going to find a job once they're here.
This sounds like it has a pretty big impact on the labor market. What's this like for employers, but also what's this like for consumers?
Especially when we're talking about the agricultural industry, which has been where a lot of the highest profile raids have been. There was one high profile raid of a bunch of 7-Eleven franchises in 2018, where very few workers were actually apprehended, but that was an outlier. There's been a little bit more interest in kind of these franchise raids under Trump, but generally the places that are targeted for these big raids are agricultural processing plants. And that's the sector where no one can really speculate what a labor force without unauthorized immigrant labor or without an immigrant labor period would look like, because it's just, we've never seen it before. There have been special agricultural visa provisions, there still are, but that's kind of been the backbone of the labor force since like the 20s. There are plenty of kind of political structures in place, because agricultural labor is the quintessential Americans won't do it. There have been some really interesting investigative journalism pieces about just how horrible the conditions on these floors are. They're not the kind of job that people will necessarily take for the kind of wages that you can pay someone who isn't authorized to work here. And so the ceiling for how much it would cost consumers to be buying goods at the end of this, if you're assuming that everyone is being hired at competitive rates from within a market limited to US citizens, if you're assuming, you know, 100% compliance with the entire other suite of regulations, is just, it's unfathomable because it's just so, I mean, it would just be such a radical change, and it would probably be just so astronomically high in terms of prices that you'd see a massive distortion of the market. Like, for everything that people were talking about with when we were talking about shutting down the border with Mexico, of, oh, the avocados, oh, all of the imports that we're dealing with from
right.
Mexico.
It's a lot more than avocados.
Right, exactly. Well, it wouldn't be avocados, but it would be a ton. I mean, the cost to domestic meat prices would be ridiculous, because that requires, like, you know, chickens don't slaughter and debone themselves. That's something that we really have relied on what we call unskilled immigrant labor to do. And it's just that it turns out that in practice, hour by hour, day by day, it's a demanding enough job that, quote unquote, skilled or not, most people who aren't already doing it aren't particularly well equipped.
So this is obviously no fun for the immigrants who are involved. It's not great for consumers. It is certainly a burden on employers. And I want to actually ask you about the employer aspect of this. Koch Foods issued a statement saying, well, you know, we've tried to be in compliance. We were actually an early adopter of E-Verify. E-Verify is, of course, probably the biggest single policy response that conservative anti-immigration activists push in terms of saying, well, we want to stop people at workplaces. And yet the states that have tried E-Verify find extremely high rates of false positives. They find that the databases are very difficult. What do the fact that these raids are happening at places that have adopted E-Verify early and are saying that this is part of that they're complying with these rules, what does that say about this, about E-Verify as a policy and about its effectiveness?
The argument, the way that this tends to get defended by the champions of E-Verify is that true E-Verify has never been tried, essentially, right? And we have seen an admittedly slight but still present decline in E-Verify error rates over the last decade. But you're right, we're still looking at a world where employers who are egregious enough in violating the law that, you know, the Homeland Security Investigations team decided that they were going to make an example of them, it doesn't necessarily correlate with the expressed willingness to follow the law that E-Verify shows. In practice, what this ends up meaning is that employers get let off the hook liability-wise a little bit, right? Because as long as they're running people through the E-Verify system, there was one case in the search warrant where a woman had tried to present documents for work authorization, and those documents had been rejected. And then she comes back 3 weeks later with a different set of identity documents, goes to the same HR person, and they go through. And so if you're using E-Verify, well, those documents were legitimate. This person is authorized to work in the United States. This is fine. It does make it a little bit more, it allows employers to say, well, we are doing our best to comply with the law, instead of kind of having a common sense, you know, maybe you shouldn't be allowing the same person to present two sets of documents if enforcing immigration law is important to you, kind of thing.
So E-Verify adds bureaucratic complexity while allowing employers off the hook and not making life better for anybody else. Final question here for you. Immigration is just so complicated politically and culturally, and it often gets talked about in pretty reductionist ways. Either more immigrants are good, or more immigrants are bad. We need more, they're breaking the law. What's the biggest single thing that you, as an immigration reporter who have covered this for years, what's the biggest single thing that you think people are missing from the immigration debate?
I would say right now, and this has changed over time, but right now there's a certain assumption that people are either legitimate refugees who are fleeing some particular form of persecution, or they are just coming to work. And the reality is that people are never just settling in another country for one reason, right? There might be one specific thing that makes them decide that it's the right time, but they're coming. They may want to work. They may be coming because they're worried about, they're not worried about their own safety, but they're worried about the safety of their children. There may be a particular threat that they're fleeing, which may itself might be at the hands of the government, might be at the hands of criminals, might be something between the two. If people were just lumps of labor going back and forth, it would be much easier to retain the legal work system that we have right now, which kind of assumes that people will be here for a couple of years and then they'll go back. That's not how people work. They, you know, integrate into communities, they put down roots. And so because you can't easily isolate why people are moving or why they're staying, it makes the whole system much harder to sustain.
Dara Lind is an immigration reporter at ProPublica. Dara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.